You're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and it is Sunday, the 7th of July, between 4 to 5 p.m. Holy time right here in the land of Israel. We are live. That means if it's 9 to 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time on Sunday morning, it is live by you as well if you're in that time zone. That means also that when you're listening to the show, if it's live at the times I just told you about on Sunday, then you can call into the show with any comments or questions that you might have on the topics that we're speaking about. Today, we're going to be having on Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, and he's going to be talking to us about things that are going on around the world, and we're going to be covering, as well, some of the latest news stories in Israel pertaining to, of course, the war in Gaza, the war of the left on the government of Israel. And we're going to be talking about some other news stories as well, what's happening here. Let me just go through a few news headlines. And really, they're just going to be headlines because, unfortunately, I am still suffering. I don't know if all of you know, but I've talked about it on another show that my face is swelling, my eyes are swelling, and it's really hard for me to see today. I have good days, I have bad days. I am seeing improvement now, so thank you for all of your prayers, those who are praying for me. All right, so some of the top news headlines here. A day of disruption, and we're talking about Sunday, the 7th of July. Demonstrations launched protests across the country. That's what they are saying. The organizations leading the protest against the government began the day of demonstrations in Or Haner near Gaza and simultaneously protested in front of the homes of ministers and Knesset members. I want everybody to understand when we see footage of the demonstrators that are, these are mostly left-wingers, and they've gathered up and arranged and organized many of the families of those who've been kidnapped tragically and are using them also in everything they're throwing except for the kitchen sink, trying to destroy this government that was democratically elected by the people of Israel. The left here in Israel, just like the left all over the world, those on the left, they're the same. It doesn't matter what nationality they are because they're the religion of the left, which is anti-God, as my guests will probably mention today, they're globalists against people who love God, country, and family, etc. And these people are basically, this is my opinion and many people's opinion, that they are hijacking this the tragedy of Israel. Some say they might even are really hijacking the whole tragedy of this October 7th, and they're using everything they can in order to blame the Israeli government, the leadership today under Netanyahu. And I'm not a Netanyahu fan. I don't hate him. I want to love him, but I think that he could be doing a lot better than he is, and so I'm not a fan. But they really can't stand him, and the left wants to get into power. They can't do it anymore through elections because the country is not left-wing. I want people to understand that when you see all the demonstrations, etc., it's a lot of noise, but it's not the majority of the people of Israel, even though the media, which is filled with left-wing people in there and is owned basically by the left, they are going to show you what they want and try to convince you and brainwash you that this is how the whole country feels, and it's not. There are some, in fact, parents of people who were kidnapped and are still being held by the Hamas. They're saying that they want this country to go in and finish off the Hamas, while the left is saying, no, you have to make a deal, you have to make a deal, you have to make a deal. That doesn't matter if there's going to be a ceasefire. You just have to get the hostages back, which we're not going to get all the hostages back because that's the golden ticket of the Hamas. You have to understand that. They are never going to let them all back because that's their golden ticket. But the left, anything to blame the government, to blame Bibi, to try to bring the government down. And that's why their slogan also, if you notice, is if you see these posters, it says, bring them home, as if it's our fault, as if it's Bibi's fault that these people were kidnapped. Now, in one sense, it kind of is, in the sense that for all of these years he's been the prime minister, he has not destroyed the Hamas. And so they're around to be able to kidnap them. But I think with the information that most of us have that think this way, this is not a reason that it's his fault. The slogan should not be bring them home. The slogan should be let them go. The focus should be on the enemy monsters that kidnapped them, the perpetrators, the ones who committed the crime. That's where the attention should be, and that's where the world should be focusing. Let them go. The whole world should be screaming, let them go. And by the way, that's not only Israelis that are being held right now by the Hamas, but also citizens of other countries as well. So I want you all to understand it. And the fact that they're trying to close the country down, now they're calling for a nationwide strike in the middle of a war while our boys are fighting there. They're trying to do this. They're really trying to destroy the country and to bring to collapse the government and to bring them down. And my guest here is telling me 5 Americans are being held right now. 5 Americans. Thank you for that, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. I'm going to introduce you soon onto the show. 5 Americans are also being held right now, kidnapped, and this has to be stopped. All right, here's another headline here from Israel. This is from Arut Sheva, Israel National News, IsraelNationalNews.com. You can go there and read more about this if you want. Father of hostage says, such a deal would bury my son. Right now, there's all this talk about maybe there's going to be a ceasefire with the Hamas. Maybe we can come to some agreement with them, etc. And what is the deal? It's a terrible deal. It's a terrible deal that's going to leave the Hamas alive, that's not going to return us all of our hostages, and we don't even know which hostages we're supposed to be getting. So in this article, if you read it, it's basically that we might be getting dead bodies. And maybe that these guys are alive still, but they're going to kill them before they return them because we don't even know who's alive because the Red Cross hasn't gone to visit them. No one's had any contact with them. And so he says that it's the same to them if they just kill whoever's there and his son is there. It's a bad deal. We've got to destroy the Hamas so this never happens again. Because let me warn you also, folks, if the Hamas survives this, we lost the war. The world lost the war because it means that the Hamas won. It means that the Hamas were able to come in, infiltrate over the border, commit mass murder, commit atrocities, war crimes, torture, rape, beheadings, burnings of people, burning people alive. They burned people alive, folks. The autopsies showed that there was smoke in the lungs of these people, which meant that they were alive when they were being burnt to death because they were breathing in the smoke. So we have to remember this, what kind of monsters these monsters are. And they said, as my co-host is writing again, that the Hamas is saying they will do this again and again and again, as long as they can. So we have to destroy the Hamas, because if not, it emboldens the rest of the terrorists around the world. Hey, terror works. Look what we did to Israel. Look what we did to them, and we survived the big, mighty Israeli army. And the British Foreign Secretary says, I want to get back a balanced position on Israel and Gaza. We'll be talking about this with our guest as well. Britain's new Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, tells Reuters, we've been very clear that we want to see a ceasefire. That means letting Hamas live. The fighting has to stop. That means letting Hamas live. The aid has got to get in. That means more fuel and food for the Hamas. This is an enemy of Israel. This whole idea of trying to make a balance between good and evil is crazy and insane and immoral. The fateful and painful choice awaiting the Jews of France. This is another thing we're going to be talking about in the show today. Millions of French citizens will today finally decide the composition of the parliament in France when extremists on both sides are strengthening. The choice of the Jewish community is harder than ever, this headline says. And again, that's on Arut Sheva, IsraelNationalNews.com. You can check it out. And Here's an idea. There's an article here in the same place, in Arutsheva. If every Gazan was given $15,000, and every Arab country given $15,000 per Gazan, in order that they accepted into their country to start a new life, then Gazans could leave the enclave through Egypt and no longer be subject to Hamas rule. Basically, it's good for everybody because there's really no future for the Gazans, for the Arabs in Gaza. Let them go to their other Arab countries where they're Muslims, where they speak the same language, they have the same religion, and they don't have the Hamas ruling them. And let them make a nice life there. They've forfeited their rights, in my opinion, to stay in Gaza after we saw what the civilians did. After you hear the testimonies of the survivors and the testimonies of those who were kidnapped and were brought back that we either rescued or brought back in the last deal. They say how the civilians were attacking them. One of them, I just saw it yesterday. I was watching a video of a woman who was one of the hostages. She was kidnapped. And as she was being taken back to Israel with the Red Cross in their vans, she said it was terrifying for her because she was going through massive crowds of people who came. All these Gazans came to crowd the vehicles that were going towards the border to hand over our hostages, and they were shaking the trucks, the vans that they were in, shaking them. She thought she was going to tip over. She was screaming. She had her child with her. She put a cover over her child, so the child was screaming because they thought they were going to die, that the civilians were converging on them, screaming, yelling. And as they were being brought into captivity as well, the civilians came as the terrorists were kidnapping them and bringing them into Gaza. The civilians came and they were pulling their hair and hitting them and pounding them with their fists and screaming at them, etc. These people in Gaza support the Hamas. They have to leave. As some say, there are no civilians in Gaza. They're all Hamasnikim, and they should go and leave. The Hamasnikim need to be, the fighters need to be destroyed, and the people, because we're benevolent, we would let them go and make a nice life someplace else. All right, with no more headlines right now that I'm going to read out, let me introduce my guest. We have joining us Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. He is a researcher, former lecturer at Ben-Gurion University. He's authored over 90 books and 400 research papers on science, history, and more, and he commentates on Mideast and world issues. I want to welcome to the show Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
Hi.
Good to have you on. People miss you, and they want to hear what you have to say. They love your commentary and your observations about what's going on in the world. So where would you like to start?
Oh, let's start with the U.S. for a moment. Just go over a few really basic notions here that people maybe aren't quite aware of. United States is about 4% of the world's population. Four. Okay? However, within that 4% of the world population, the United States has more people in psychiatric care than all the rest of the world combined. The United States has more people in prisons than all the rest of the world combined. The United States spends more on policing than all the rest of the world combined. The United States has more people, gross obesity? I don't know, there's a better word for it than
okay.
That. Horribly obese than all the rest of the world combined.
Morbidly obese, I think they say, morbidly.
That's the word I was looking for, thank you. So when the United States, for instance, sends a flotilla of its navy, the most expensive navy in any reckoning in the history of the world, and it sends this enormous flotilla to the Red Sea to control the goat herds, literally goat herds, that's all they are. The Houthis in Yemen they raise goats, that's what they live on. Most of them are barefoot. And the U.S. Navy lost. get that sentence into your heads very, very strongly. The United States Navy lost against the Houthis.
Which
Houthis
is Iran.
The United States Navy knows it. Anybody with the slightest bit of sense knows it. The United States Navy, with all of its firepower, lost against the Houthis and have given up. The Red Sea is closed. So let's understand the ramifications of that. What did Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, say last week? He said they're going to, if war breaks out, actual war, I don't know why he's saying if war breaks out, because there's been a war now for 8 months. They've been
nine months now.
For months.
Today's July 7th. It's exactly 9 months.
Yeah. He said if war breaks out between Hezbollah and Israel, they're going to close the Mediterranean Sea to all Allied shipping. So anybody who thinks that's hubris, you're simply wrong. They did it in the Red Sea. They can do it in the Mediterranean, because the American Navy, pardon me, very sorry to have to say this, with all of that firepower and all of those boats and missiles and the airplanes and everything else, they lack one thing, and that's the little thing that's supposed to be dangling between people's legs. They are worthless. That's not a nice thing for me to say. I'm being very, very nasty. The United States Navy has proven itself to be of zero value.
Okay, so explain to our listeners why. But explain why.
I just did. They went to Yemen, said they were going to stop the actions of the Houthis closing the Red Sea. The Red Sea is closed. Not only is the Red Sea closed to almost all shipping, but the entire area around it as well. Then the Houthis have expanded their actions. They not only closed what's called the Straits of Mandeb, but they closed the entire Red Sea. They're closing more and more areas of the Arabian Sea as well, south of Arabia. So they're expanding their operations. And the United States Navy has proven itself to be impotent.
Why? Is it the orders that they're under? A bad command? Is it lack of motivation, morale? What is the reason why the powerful USA Navy is being bullied by a bunch of Houthis that are proxy of Iran?
Well, I'm not there, so I can't really say it definitively. My estimation is that they've had limitations put on them by the political echelon. I mean, remember, the main spokesperson of the Biden administration is a former admiral in the Navy, Kirby. I mean, she's supposedly an admiral. Admiral is a very high rank. It's like a general, right? So he's supposed to know what he's talking about. So he stands up there and lies. Day in and day out, he lies. And everybody knows that he's lying. Everybody knows that he's a liar. Everybody knows that anything that he says is as trustworthy as the newspaper that you wrapped a fish in.
Do you believe that the United States is really against Iran? Because from their actions, they are wanting Iran to be the balance in the Middle East. The Obama administration shipped tons of cash to the Iranians that were able to then funnel that to the terrorists and their proxies, etc. I mean, maybe America really isn't against Iran, even though they say that they're on Israel's side and etc.
I think you're basically wrong, first of all. The United States does not say that they're on Israel's side. They did in the very beginning of the war, but they have not said that lately. They have been very, very clear. What's this horrible person's name? Amos Hochstein or something like that? Am I mispronouncing it? He's the United States negotiator with Hezbollah. And he reportedly has told Hezbollah to, he's been giving them information for targeting. Targeting secret bases in Israel that the United States knows about. So is the United States against Iran?
Secret Israeli bases? Because America has secret bases in Israel also.
Yes, yes.
So they would be giving away their own?
He's been giving out information that is not public information.
On America's own bases here in Israel?
I don't know exactly what bases he's been discussing, but the leaders of not just Nasrallah, but some of his other henchmen have been openly discussing it, and they think it's hilarious that they're getting targeting information from the Americans.
Okay.
And this is public.
Disturbing.
And the man isn't even intelligent enough to keep a secret.
Why would he be doing that?
Because he hates America and he hates the West.
I'm not really understanding that, because if he's sent there by the American government.
He is Biden's official representative to that area.
Okay,
yes.
So basically you're saying that Biden then hates the United States.
I don't say Biden, because Biden is an empty shell.
Oh, Biden. Oh, Biden.
Biden is a nothing.
Oh, Biden.
He is zero. He is less than zero.
Some people are calling him Oh, Biden, because those who believe that Obama is his puppeteer, so they call him Oh, Biden.
Whatever.
That's what some are saying.
I don't know who is running the United States. I can guess, but I don't know who it is. It's clearly not Joe Biden, because he can't run his own shoes.
Right.
I mean, the man is a moron. The man was a moron 5 years ago. The man was a moron 10 years ago. The man was an evil idiot 25 years ago.
Well, he certainly doesn't have Israel's back, which he swore. You know, he said, we have Israel's back. Israel can depend on us. And I'm glad that this has happened, because Israel needs to know that we can't rely on him. We can only rely on God. We can only on our Father in heaven. That's, you know, we're a nation that dwells alone, and that's what we have to realize. And the quicker we realize that, the better off we'll be. Okay, next story. There's things happening in France.
So I'm just mentioning the United States. Now let's go on. Okay, so let's go to the UK. Okay, and the UK had a government, the so-called Conservative Party, the Tories, or whatever you want to call them now. They fell because they were horrible, because they did a terrible job. So the fact that the Brits voted somebody else in is entirely reasonable. However, the actual result of the election was that Labour has a larger majority today than they have had for, I think, what is it, 8 decades or something, 7 decades, something like that. I don't remember the exact number, for a very, very long time. And that's not just a superficial issue that they have a large majority in not only in Parliament, but in everything else. People need to be aware, the 26 largest cities in England all have Muslim mayors.
Yeah, London, that should be today, a red flag for people there.
People are saying that London itself already has a Muslim majority in the population of London. I don't know if that's true, but that's been reported. All of them have Muslim mayors, all 26 largest cities in England. Up until just a month ago, the head of Scotland, or whatever they call him, is a prime minister of Scotland, or whatever it's called, was a Muslim. He just resigned and was replaced, but anybody who thinks Britain is still Great Britain is really, really pretending. I mean, that's not even an error anymore. The Jewish community in Britain is extraordinarily nervous for very good reasons. The only thing that they should be thinking about is getting out of there as soon as possible. But let's go across the channel now. France. Yeah, we're in the middle of elections. Today is the second round of elections in France. Marine Le Pen has apparently won the first round. Most people say that she was probably win the second round. But at the same time, There are enormous riots throughout France. People are not aware, but a third of France's police are Muslims. A third of France's armed forces are Muslims. So even if Marine Le Pen is indeed voted in and somehow takes control of the parliament, remember, this is parliament, this is not the presidency, so Macron is still in there. So even if she takes control of the parliament, that does not mean that she can actually controls anything on the executive side. And she certainly cannot control either the police or the armed forces, who are indeed today controlled by the Muslim communities. Remember, there are over 900 so-called neighborhoods throughout France where no non-Muslim is allowed to enter. Over 900 neighborhoods. Any non-Muslim that enters there does not exit. Spain. Very similar with what's happening in Spain. Today, it's clear to almost anybody in Spain that the Muslims today control what's happening in Spain. By the way, they do not. They have more control in Spain than they do in Portugal, which is interesting. I haven't found an explanation why the Portuguese are still functioning, but they somehow are. Spain is no longer a functioning Christian country. Australia, let's jump across the seas now. Australia. The Australian government last week brought in the Israeli ambassador to the Foreign Office to be reprimanded pardon me, by the Australian Foreign Office and to be warned not to attack Hezbollah in Lebanon. I find that phenomenally amazing. I don't know how to express myself.
Chutzpah, as we say.
It's not even chutzpah. It goes way beyond that. I mean, again, it's a Labour government, so I'm not shocked. These are people that consider themselves to be globalists, but they, you know, if we look at the remarks, for instance, of Penny Wang, the foreign minister of Australia, remember when she came to Israel, many months after October 7th, she refused to go to the areas around Gaza where the fighting was taking place, or where the fighting had taken place on the 7th of October. She refused to visit these places. She refused to receive any of the returned hostages, to speak with any of them. She made it very clear that she was 100% on the side of Hamas. And that's the foreign minister of Australia. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not accusing Australians of being, I don't know, A, B, or C. I'm not accusing Frenchmen of being this, that, or the other thing. I am accusing these governments of being. These governments are clearly in the process of being taken over by the international jihad. I'll remind people something that I've mentioned more than once on the show in the past. About 10 years ago, I think it was, maybe a bit more, I had here had a visit from a very senior social worker from Holland. Most people probably know that I spent a great deal of time in Holland some years ago. And he said to me that of the few native Dutch young men and women that actually are born, that actually live, that actually exist today, over a third of them are drunk 24/7. So if anybody thinks that the Christians in Europe are going to effectively fight the jihad, which is being prepared across Europe, across all of Western Europe, I think they need to rethink themselves. I think the jihad is very close to taking over major portions of Europe. And I'm not speaking of 50 years from now. I'm speaking of perhaps even months in some places.
I think that a lot of these Europeans thought that these Arab immigrants would assimilate into their, you know, fantastic Western society of freedom, etc., that they're going to fall in love with it and assimilate and be French and be British, etc., and that has not happened. The opposite has happened, and then they marry into the, you know, the home population, and these girls convert to Islam. Or the boys.
I think it's actually much worse than that. I think they actually viewed themselves as being so racially superior to the Arabs that they didn't even count them.
Well,
that's typically European. Europeans are racist, and they always have been for thousands of years. This has been the case in every European country. Pardon me, every Western European country. For the past many decades now, and I'm differentiating between the Western and the Eastern European, because the Eastern European countries that used to be, for instance, controlled by communists, went to the opposite direction when communism was finally crashed. Places like Czechia, Poland, Hungary, etc., are all very strongly anti-Muslim. But in parallel with that, Hungary, for instance, has a female fertility rate which is well below one. Remember, maintaining parity is 2.11.
Yeah, I'll just insert here. I was in Hungary a few years ago, and I remember there were not a lot of families walking around with a baby carriage and a baby in it. If you saw a baby in a baby carriage, it was like, oh, look, because it was something to see. Instead, they had dogs that they were walking on leashes, and they were dressed up in little dresses, the dogs, and little clothes, and they were all groomed very nicely. And that's who they have as children today. That's the younger generation in Hungary. So,
well,
yeah,
far beyond just Hungary. Hungary is one of the extremes, but it's far beyond Hungary. The same thing happens in Romania, to a lesser extent in Poland, to a greater extent in the three Baltic countries, Estonia, Lithuania, etc. None of these countries, let me rephrase that. First of all, there is no country in Europe, zero, that has a positive replacement in terms of their population at all. The best countries in terms of birth rates are places like France, where they have about 1.9 rather than 2.11 birth rate. However, the vast majority of those births are actually Muslims.
Right.
There is not a single country in Europe that has a positive birth rate. Not one.
Well, you know, we predicted, and I'm not just saying you and I, but many have predicted that this was going to happen. We see the churches closing and mosques opening, and people could see what was going to be born. People were predicting that Europe was going to be lost in just a
That's
matter
a very
of time.
Good point about churches. The present so-called king of England, who was, as far as I'm concerned, is a piece of dirt. And I couldn't care less if people are insulted by that, has sold over 1,000 British churches over the past decade. You know, he's the head of the Anglican Church. He has sold over 1,000 churches, almost all of them as mosques. Now, does he pocket that money, or does that money go to somebody else? I have no idea. But in fact, over 1,000 churches over the past decade have been sold.
Yeah,
in
I think
England alone,
every
about all of the all
every
of
few weeks in, another church in Europe was closing.
Yes. So, and when they close, they usually do not stand open, stand empty for a long time. Very rarely.
Yes, that's the trend.
The international jihad. Remember after the scandal concerning Saudi Arabia. Concerning the 11th of September of 2001, et cetera, and there was a reformation in the royal family, and particularly under the present ruler, the Mohammed bin Salman, They want to be much less obvious in what they do. So their jihad is what's now called white jihad.
So I want to remind people that if you're listening live, that means if it's Sunday, July 7th, between 4 to 5 p.m. Holy Time right here in the Land of Israel, or if it's between 9 to 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time, that we are live and you can call into the show with a comment or question. You can feel free to disagree with us. We're very respectful. We know everyone has a right to their own opinion. We're not insulted. We don't get offended. I mean, unless you're calling for, you know, murder. We don't like, but of course, if you're respectful, we'll be respectful to you and we welcome your calls. You can call in. Our numbers are on the top of our homepage on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And, you can weigh in, give a different, you have a different opinion, a different, or you have a question, feel free to call in while we're on the air on this live show. Go ahead. Mordechai. Oh. Okay, I think I lost Mordechai. So let me go back to my notes then, because I really want to let you know what's going on here in Israel until we get him back. And just a moment. I'm reading from Arut Sheva, IsraelNationalNews.com. I'm waiting for this to... Ah, okay, it's... All right, so basically, I want to go back and say again that on Sunday, if you're going to be on the roads, you want to get home before 5 p.m., because I think that's when a lot of things are going to start happening on the roads. Roads may close down from protests, etc., on the main arteries of the cities. And this is, again, against the government. They can't wait. They're allotted time. You know, in a democracy, you have an election. It's a free election. The people vote. And if you don't like the candidate that was elected, then you wait 4 years until the term is up, and then you go to elections again. But not so with the left. And that doesn't matter whether it's left wing in the United States or in Israel or in Europe or anywhere else. It's all the same, the left wing, in my opinion. And they are, by hook or by crook, are going to try to bring the government down so they can try to get back into power. But they're realizing, again, this is my opinion, that they've pretty much lost the ability to get power through democratic elections. Because the people are not with them. The majority of the people here in Israel are not with them. And so they are trying to take it over by force, trying to collapse the government. Okay, I think that we have Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem back with us. Mordechai? All right, I'm going to still try to get him if I can. And... So that's what's happening here in Israel. It's a lot of noise, but don't be smart when you watch the news and know that you may not be getting the whole truth. It's just what they're focusing on. All right, do we have Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem back with us?
Yes, we do.
Okay, great. All right, so go ahead. You were talking.
I don't know. Where were we?
I think we were talking about the Europe, if I'm not mistaken, and how it's changing over now.
Okay, it's more than Europe, because I mentioned also Australia. So we're talking about basically all of the countries that were traditionally Christian. I want to give you a data point that people might not be aware of. Okay. The United States presently has a moron for president. It's a pity. I mean, you know, you need to think about this. By the Constitution, the president is the head of all the United States armed forces. So if, let's say, country X decides to attack the United States, how much time does this person have to make a decision on whether or not to protect the United States from an actual attack? Let's say that atomic weapons are launched, or let's say that missiles are launched and you don't know if they're atomic or not. How much time does he have to make a decision on whether or not the population of the United States, not the country, the population of the United States survives. You know what the number is?
I do not.
6 minutes.
Hmm.
That's the window. 6 minutes.
So you're, just to be clear, so you're saying that if Russia or Iran were to fire nuclear weapons at the United States, God forbid, that it would take 6 minutes to get there only?
No. They have a six-minute window to decide on whether or not to launch their own weapons.
Okay. I'm glad you're clearing that
up. Retaliate
right.
or not.
Because, I mean, I understand that Iran's got bases in Nicaragua, which is very close to America. And there's also submarine delivery. There's all sorts of delivery. There's suitcase delivery if you just want to do smaller tactical things. But go ahead.
They have a base in Nicaragua, and they have a base in Cuba, first of all. Remember, that's 90 miles from the United States. So I'm not even talking about it. I'm talking about missiles that come from over the Arctic or over the Atlantic Ocean. If they're coming from Cuba, then they have less than 1 minute to decide. Now, this is a decision of whether the population of the United States remains intact or not, remains viable. Let's say that these missiles are nuclear missiles, but they're not meant to kill people. They're just, quote unquote, meant to cause an EMP pulse, an electromagnetic pulse weapon.
Which would shut down all the power.
Shut down
all the power. Toss airplanes out of the air.
From great height. You don't have to hit anything in the United States.
Cut off communications. Yeah, all electricity, power goes down.
North Korea has already announced that they have that capability, and I believe them, because it's not really very complex to do that. According to the United States Congress, not me, not little old Mordechai, but the United States Congress, study done some time ago, 90% of the United States population would be wiped out within a few months. Wiped out as in dead.
Right.
90%. No one is directly hit by any of these missiles. No one is harmed by explosion or by radiation. Just an electromagnetic pulse, just. 90% of the population, according to the United States Congress. When was the study done? During the time of Obama.
Okay, I think people need to understand how something like that can happen. And imagine, again, not just airplanes falling out of the sky and your car stopped running and there's accidents and people are killed and the power is gone. But, you know, even here in Israel, we're expecting that if, God forbid, the war explodes with Hezbollah in the north and they start really shooting missiles at us and take out our power stations here in Israel, our infrastructure, because that's what they're going to be aiming for, that after 3 days only without power in Israel, if it would come to that, God forbid, it would be total mayhem, chaos, people who are stuck in elevators dying, people who are just on the top floor, can't flush your toilet, there's no water pumping, there's no gas pumping out of gas stations, you can't travel, there could be crime because of people panicking. This is for anywhere in the world I'm talking about. Disease because you can't flush your toilets, and people dying because they don't have medicines and delivery and refrigeration, and people get sick, etc., etc. It just goes domino effect.
It's not quite the same thing in Israel as it is in the United States. Israel is mostly prepared for it, mostly, not 100%, but is mostly prepared for that sort of an attack. So you're not talking about the same kind of percentages here, nothing even approaching it. But there will be horrendous damage, of course. If the electrical infrastructure in Israel was to be massively destroyed...
No air conditioning. I'm joking.
Sorry?
I'm joking. I'm saying no air conditioning. Oi.
Okay, so it's not quite the same in Israel because Israel is mostly prepared for it. The United States, this is an interesting fact that people aren't aware of. only one of the 50 states in the United States is prepared for an EMP attack. Do you know which one it is?
I do not.
Maine.
And is there a reason for that?
But they had a crazy senator who decided to take it upon, I think it was a lady actually, take it upon herself to take that, you know, to prepare the state for it.
Interesting.
The only state in the United States that bothered to prepare. During the time of Trump, by the way, when he was president, he actually passed an executive order to force all electric companies throughout the United States to prepare for an EMP attack. However, since he did not control the so-called deep state, the order was ignored.
That's okay, not surprising, because a deep state is more global minded rather than patriotic and national oriented, I believe. My opinion. Many people's opinion.
So that kind of attack we were talking about, for instance, if the United States was under attack, they would have 6 minutes to make a decision that would basically decide whether or not the population of the United States would survive.
You had sent me a point that you wanted to talk about today, talking about, will Israel use a nuclear submarine to attack Iran?
I said that? I didn't say that.
No, you sent an article that was talking about, they were saying that Israel would do it, but I'm asking the question, would Israel use a nuclear submarine to attack Iran?
First of all, as far as I'm aware, Israel does not have a nuclear submarine. Now, it's possible that Israel has converted one or more of its submarines to be nuclear powered. I'm not aware of that. That would be secret. But officially, all of the Israeli submarine fleet are diesel powered. That's nothing to do with armaments. That's just the powering. When you say a nuclear submarine, you're talking about how it's powered, not how it's armed. Do Israeli submarines have nuclear missiles? According to the Swedish, I forget what it's called, commission that looks at nuclear armaments around the world, I forget the name of this particular group, pardon me, Israel does have nuclear weapons on some of its submarines. I can neither confirm nor deny it, obviously. First of all, I'm not a submariner. I've never been in a submarine, and I certainly do not know for a fact whether we do or not. I hope we do, but I don't know it. But according to this group, Israel does have nuclear submarines, and they are capable of a so-called second strike capability. But all I can do is quote public records and not give any news of my own on that.
Yeah, I want to make... I want to make this point also that, unless anyone think that Israel is looking to nuke cities and kill millions of people, or hundreds of thousands of people, like what we saw, God forbid, in World War II with Hiroshima and Nagasaki, etc., that's not Israel's goal at all. If they were to use it, I imagine, if we had it, like you say, and if we were to use it, it would be something very tactical. And targeted as much as possible in order just to make Tehran non-functional to be able to...
I think even that is an exaggeration. There's pretty much a consensus around the world today that whoever is the first to use a nuclear device against another country, all other countries in the world would unite to annihilate that country. Pretty much consensus today around the world, even among countries that utterly hate one another. Whatever country would be the first to use a nuclear device against any other country today, that country would probably be totally annihilated by the entire world.
Well, and we see that Israel's never tried out any of this, like North Korea has, like the United States has, like other countries.
That's not necessarily true. Publicly, that is correct. But there are rumors that Israel has exploded nuclear devices in other places, clearly under a great veil of secrecy, but such rumors do exist. Again, I don't have any personal knowledge of it, nor do I claim that I ever have had, but there are some published rumors of published reports to that effect.
Okay.
I don't know.
And so, and if that is true, my message to our enemies is don't try us.
Don't try us in any case. I don't think I certainly do not believe that Israel would ever be a first strike nation. We would never use nuclear weapons as a first strike. That does not mean that we would not adopt what's called a Samson option, which means that if we thought that we were going to really totally go down, we would not go down quietly.
Mm-hmm. And it's best for everybody that, God forbid, it never gets to a stage like that.
Of course.
And the West and all decent nations that value humanity, that value human rights, that value right from wrong, should be supporting Israel against the monstrous terrorists of the Hamas, of the Hezbollah, Iran, who is sponsoring them, etc. They should be on Israel's side and rooting for us and helping any way they can. This is my opinion, because I as I say almost every show, remember that this is not just against Israel. Iran says first the Saturday people, Israel, the Jewish people, and then the Sunday people, America, the Christians, the Western world. First the little Satan, Israel, and then the big Satan, America. So we're just the canary in the coal mine.
That these people, the so-called colleges and etc. in the United States, where there are massive demonstrations against Israel and in the favor of Hamas, these are not people that want the United States to be prosperous and to survive. And they're very open about what they want. Very, very open about it, very clear.
Yeah, it would be good for people to understand who your enemy is. They hate Westerners. They think that the women are all, I hate to say this word, but they think that the women are all ladies of the evening. I won't say the word, I'll just say ladies of the evening. And that the morals of the West are low and disgusting when compared to their morals of honor, et cetera, et cetera. And Westerners, especially in America, unfortunately, because I appreciate America. America's a wonderful country, wonderful people in there. But there's some element there now of, they're worried about what pronouns you use. So,
let me just remind you that Albana, the person who created the Muslim Brotherhood, in 1928, spent a year in the United States, mostly in the area of Denver, Colorado. And he came to the conclusion that the moral laxitude in the United States is so extreme that the United States is irredeemable. And that was one of the reasons why he created the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, that's what they say, America, the big Satan. So watch out, whatever you will want us to win, because you don't want it coming to your shores. And just as they kidnapped and tortured and raped and kidnapped, etc., Israelis and other citizens here too, they can do it to Americans. They could do it to French. They can do it to British. They can do it to Australia, anywhere in the world. And if they win, if Israel goes to a ceasefire and the Hamas remain alive, and this emboldens them, this will embolden them to do it more because it works. So they have to be destroyed.
We'll go back to where I began this discussion. They believe, the jihadists believe clearly that they are winning. They believe that England, France, Spain, Belgium, are all on the very, very verge of falling to the jihad. Remember, there's a model, I think it was Moshe Sharon, I'm not certain who wrote it. It was about, I think, 30 years ago, he wrote an article about the stages of jihad. And it did not mean in the sense of going in with armies and conquering. Now, clearly, no Arab country has an army that can conquer any country in Europe. That's not the way that's done. It's not the way it's going to be done. It's not the way that they're planning to do it. It's not what they're working on.
As they say, it's not with the bullet, it's with the ballot. And you already see that the major cities in the UK are all have Muslim mayors now, just like you were saying when you opened up the program when you came on. So not with the bullet, but with the ballot.
Number, by the way.
What?
26 is an interesting number.
Because?
It's the name of God.
Ah.
Yud-Kev-Vav-Ke.
Okay. Those are Hebrew letters for anybody who doesn't know. All right. I guess we'll wrap it up. Is there anything that you want to talk about or share before we say goodbye?
The only thing I want to say is that if you know, many decades ago, there was an American comedian by the name of Belle Barth, who was a horrible person. I mean, she was really very vulgar. But her statement was, "If I don't embarrass you, I have failed." And if you've listened to anything that I've said and you don't feel somehow affected by that, then you're stupid.
Okay. What was the name of this comedian you were saying about?
Belle Barth.
I don't recall.
No. You're much too young.
I'm a grandmother of 10. Thank God. Yeah, I'm too young. Oh, okay.
Belle Barth was like in the Catskills. And if I remember correctly, this would have been the 1950s, which is before you were born.
Yes, this was before I was born. Not much, but before. All right, everybody. I want to thank you all for being with us. I want to wish you all safety, peace, joy, family, the blessings of it. And we should all get along with each other. No more war, please God. But if there's bad guys around, we got to stop it. You've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.